from inside the WAER studios.
Long outlet pass, Ryan Simmons inside! He scores the game winner! Give the assist to Don Mattona! Syracuse wins!
Finds Guerrier, open, drives baseline, goes up, and hammers it home! Quincy Guerrier, hello!
And it's intercepted! Andre Sisco!
Flings it from 75 feet past the scoreboard, and he connected! Elijah Hughes throws up a prayer at the buzzer, and somehow it's answered!
It's the Ostrom Avenue Podcast.
The Orange, take the Camping World Bowl.
Syracuse gets the program signature win it always needed. Perhaps the biggest upset in program history.
Taj Harris passed the 45. He's past midfield. 30, 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Syracuse.
And one, Joe Girard.
Three ball, Buddy Boeheim. He got all three of them. Huge shot from Buddy.
Pass point. Black got it. Game winner. Brendan Curry with the winner.
Hughes left wing charges and slams with the right hand.
Killing a three at the buzzer. Oh, it's good. He made it.
And here's your hosts, Owen Valentine and Ben Shulman.
Welcome into the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Owen Valentine, Ben Shulman here talking Syracuse basketball. The football season is finally over, completely behind us. We're done. We're done with it. Throw it away. Don't talk about that until at least the summer. Let the basketball season finish itself out. And until then, we've got a lot of Syracuse basketball to talk and a lot of interesting storylines in this game. Obviously, Buddy Boeheim now announced to be back for this upcoming game on Saturday against Boston College. We'll get into that. We'll get into some conversations. We'll get into a lot of Boston College with our new friend of the program, AJ Black. We've got a couple friends of the program, so if you're a guest listening to this, reach out to us. We'll have you back on. We're expanding. We're looking for our recurring guests and continuing that. Follow us on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Give us some tweets. We've been tweeting throughout these games. My personal favorite tweet from the Ostrom right now, we've got two. First of all was the Friday Night Lights from a couple of weeks ago. If you missed that, that was an iconic one. And now we're going Outer Banks with John B., John Bolajak, John B., he's got some flow going. Look at that. We're having some fun on Twitter. You can have some fun with us at Ostrom Avenue Pod. Ben, there are just bounties of storylines regarding Syracuse basketball through four games this season. And obviously last night, that Rutgers game and the 79-69 loss for Syracuse brings a couple of big questions to the table. And it seems like the most pressing one. We thought he escaped the hot seat for a little bit, but he is right back onto the hot seat. Joe Girard has a lot of questions surrounding him right now.
And warranted, you know, when you have one good game in four, which he did, the last game before Rutgers was a strong performance, but everyone kind of shot the lights out versus Ryder. So, you know, it's hard to say that it wasn't just a great matchup for Syracuse in a way. Girard comes into this game. He plays mostly off the ball, which I already thought at the beginning of the game, this is not a good look to see Kadari carrying it up and Joe off the ball for the future of the starting point guard spot. Not looking good for JG3. And then he shoots 1 for 8. You can't do that. 3 points. I think a lot of people are maybe overlooking that he had 6 assists, which is pretty impressive. But at the same time, Joe Girard is in there to be a score-first player. He was a score-first point guard last year. He did a good job setting teammates up, but he definitely was looking for himself more than other guys, which isn't a problem. It's his style of play, and he can't execute that style of play if he can't hit shots, which he just plain isn't doing right now.
Definitely. And when I saw them have Kadari bringing the ball up and using Joe as sort of an off-guard or an off-ball kind of guard, I was a little bit excited because it sort of gave me the Trevor Cooney type vibes that they did with Caleb Joseph at the one or Tyler Ennis at the one. And this is a point that I talked about a little bit yesterday. And it's something that I thought could work in Joe's favor, being a spot up shooter, being a volume shooter, to be off ball and not have to worry about the distribution aspect of being the one and to just go get open and try to create a shot for yourself. And he wasn't really even able to do that. He forced a lot of, you know, tough shots and difficult shots. And when he did get the open looks, which he had a couple of times, a couple of nice, decent looks off of curls, he was unable to execute. And one of the big reasons that Trevor Cooney, and I know you can say what you want about Trevor Cooney in terms of a lot of, there's a narrative about Trevor Cooney that he underperformed, which I completely disagree with. I just think the expectations were too high. He was a guy that went out there and balled, and he balled game in and game out, that the world just thought that Trevor Cooney would never miss a three. And when you go into a game with expectations that you can't miss a three, you can only disappoint from there on out. Trevor Cooney was phenomenal at what he did, and that's what I didn't see out of Joe yesterday. Trevor Cooney never stopped moving, not once. When he was off the ball, he went corner to wing, back underneath, got his down screens, and you saw it at points from Joe yesterday, and you saw it in one of the key moments of the game when Joe came around the screen, did exactly what you saw Trevor Cooney do for so many years, gets the screen from the big, gets open, and finds a nice entry pass, and it ends up being dished out by Marek Dolezal to find, I believe it was a cutting Quincy Guerrier for two, and that's the last basket Syracuse scored of the game. They shut down from there, but that was not a look that you saw out of Joe all too often, and it worked when it happened, but he just was not doing it, and it's now third game in four. You've played four games, and yes, last game was decent, but you've got a lot of issues, and it's not just, oh, you're a volume shooter that's not shooting. This is something that we've hinted at. He is a defensive liability out there. He has shown it time and time again. Jim Boeheim mentioned it in the press conference yesterday. Joe is not great at the top of the zone, and it's a struggle that's been exploited a couple of times. Go back to game one. Michael Green from Bryant draws, you know, Joe picks up two fouls just because he can't rotate fast enough. There are a lot of issues regarding Joe Girard, and it's a very, you know, complicated situation because Buddy's back. Joe does not have the virtue of there not being another guard on the roster right now. There are three guards now, which means someone's on the bench. And the way Kadari Richmond's looked and the way Buddy Boeheim looked in game one, Joe could be finding himself sitting for at least half of this basketball game on Saturday.
Yeah, defense is an interesting point. And I think a point that even before Joe started shooting poorly lurked kind of in the back of the heads of a lot of the media and even fans watching this team is, you look at Kadari Richmond, 6'5", really long wingspan. That's the kind of guy you're used to seeing at the top of a Syracuse zone. It's nothing that Joe Girard can do. He can't make himself not 6'1". He's 6'1". And that's not how Syracuse typically recruits. That's not who we've seen in the last few years. And frankly, when Syracuse has been its most successful, that's not really the type of player that's been at the top of the zone. There have been guys, but it's the Michael Carter Williams. It's even the Frank Howards up there who were getting their hands in lanes and helping Syracuse attack in transition. Because the Orange, in my opinion, are best when they're scoring on the move. And when they turn defense into offense, that's something that Richmond can do that Girard can't really do, at least at the same level. Kadari's been great, 5 steals against Rutgers yesterday. But I want to list some Girard stats before we, you know, definitively say.
Let me jump in quickly before you rattle off the Girard stats. Let me give the one Kadari stat that jumps off the page. We just tweeted about this at Ostrom Avenue Pod on Twitter. Kadari is number 26 in the country in steal percentage. Number 26 in the country, the fourth best freshman. He averages one steal per 16 possessions of the opposition. He is in the lanes. He is consistently in the lanes. And that is where this defense thrives at the top of the zone. And it's something that we've seen in the past. And last year, you look and Joe's a little bit faster than Buddy. But at the same time, Buddy's at least got the length to make up for it. And when you've got length and Kadari and Buddy and Joe is struggling on all facets of the basketball game right now, it's a tough spot. And the stats are going to speak for it even further.
Yeah, in Kadari's defense here, 12 steals in the last three games to support you. That's pretty ridiculous. But I'm going to break down Joe. So Joe obviously isn't scoring a lot. His field goal percentage is way down. It was only 35 last year. It's down to 26. But the concerning thing for me here, his three-point percentage, pretty similar. It was 32 last year. It's 30 this year. Not incredibly different. His two-point percentage, last year he was 38.5% on two-point shots. This year he's shooting 15% from inside the arc. I talked to Mike Waters in a piece I did on the backcourt before the season. Shameless plug. Go check it out on SoundCloud. He said Joe added on weight with the goal of trying to get more drives into the lane, be more successful going to the bucket, and that going to the basket would help him as a three-point shooter, which all that makes sense. The opposite has happened. Joe Girard, what's one thing that everyone thinks he's great at? Free throw shooting. 90% free throw shooter last year, 89.4. Apologies, rounded that up incorrectly. This year, not only has he barely gotten to the line so far, he's shooting 67%. I know it's been four games, but 90% free throw shooters usually don't shoot 67%, even over a four-game stretch. And the last one I'll give you is in that same backcourt piece, Mike Waters talked to me about, while Joe's assist numbers weren't that high, 3.5 last year, his assist to turnover was nearly 2-1, which is solid. This year, his assists are up to over 4. His turnovers are at 3.5 per game. So I want to ask you, what do you think is the most concerning there? The 2-point field goal percentage, the free throw percentage, or the huge uptick in turnovers?
I think, it's a toss up for me right now between the turnovers and the 2-point percentage, because the free throws will happen. And I think the free throws are sort of, you know, a compounded issue because of the 2-point percentage. And he's taking just bad 2-point looks. Like, I think what you've seen, you know, in the one game you saw Buddy Boeheim play, it looked like, you know, Buddy and Joe were working on the same parts of their game, the same facets in terms of, let me diversify my ability to score. I am not just a shooter. I can put the ball on the floor. And it didn't work for Joe. And it seemed like it did work for Buddy. And Joe just seems like he's taking it to the hoop at the wrong times, getting double teamed, like not situationally making the proper decision. And so I'll give you, that is going to be my answer, because I think that's where a couple of his turnovers stem from too, is him trying to get to the rim and having to pick up a dribble on a double team. And it's one of those situations that he's just unable to really get anything rhythm wise. Yesterday, you saw it seemed like exactly what has worked for Buddy. And it's exactly what, you know, we're told that these two guards are working on in the offseason. Joe, I believe maybe it was a 1-point game at this point. Syracuse was up by one. It was maybe 65-64, so they were up 3. Rutgers scores a basket. They're on the next possession. Joe gets the ball, pump fake, puts the ball on the floor, the perfect situation, gets a wide-open 3, just can't execute. He's getting shots and can't make that. Like, it's just everything that could go wrong for Joe is going wrong right now. It is Murphy's Law in terms of Joe Girard. And that is it's tough, and it's difficult to watch, because obviously, you know, so many people want to root for this local kid, the Glens Falls native, the New York high school basketball greatest player of all time in terms of scoring. You want to root for him. You want to see him succeed. And based on what he did last year, there was no reason to not assume he could succeed. And everything is wrong. Maybe it's a little bit mental right now. You're looking at what has happened. Maybe it's just physical. Maybe it's the rhythm of, you know, the missed practices because of quarantines and the odd season. Who knows? But he's got to figure something out, because the only reason that Kadari Richmond will not be playing the full game right now is because he is not necessarily, as Jim Boeheim says, in basketball shape yet.
It'll be interesting. I think that both of us have been staying away from making this declaration, but I'll say it. I think against Boston College, I think Kadari Richmond will play more minutes. I'm actually going to back away. At the last second, I got cold feet on saying he'll start.
Because I don't know if he'll start.
Yeah, because Boeheim still defers to the older guy at times, the more experienced guy. But I will say, and I apologize for not having a hotter take, I think Kadari Richmond will play more minutes than Joe Girard will versus the Boston College Eagles.
Yeah. I think it's going to sort of turn into like a 35 minutes for Buddy, 25 minutes for Kadari. And, and your math has been terrible lately. Is it 20 minutes, right? Yeah, 20
yes,
minutes
that would,
for Joe.
That would be an even backcourt there.
35, 25, 20, I think is going to be where it ends up, with Kadari edging out Joe. I think Joe will start too. You've seen historically Joe or Jim will stick with the starting lineup and does have the faith in those older guys, as you just mentioned. But I think it's going to be a short lease situation. And Joe does have the benefit of when you put Kadari and Buddy on the court. I mean, Kadari can bring the ball up the court. Buddy can bring the ball up the court. Joe's the only one that's sort of shown themselves as a point guard. So he's got that benefit. And that's why I think he'll continue to start as a traditional point guard for Syracuse. But as you've seen, I mean, they don't necessarily want him bringing the ball up the court because of the turnovers, because of, you know, just the struggles he's had. So it's going to be a weird situation against Boston College. A lot of questions are going to have to be answered. And it's, you know, a lot of good news, though, for Syracuse in terms of Buddy being back. Buddy's been in quarantine for 2 months, it seems like. I mean, what is the situation with him? And Buddy is back on Saturday. I said it yesterday the second I heard Jim Boeheim say it. I don't know how. I don't know how that equals 14 days. I don't know what that is. But he's back, and it's going to be a tough situation for Boston College to figure out, and it brings a lot of tough situations for Jim Boeheim. We got Boston College on Saturday, and it's ACC time, which means Ben and I are going to start predictions soon. But let's look at who BC is, because it is a team that, as you'll find out shortly, has a lot of problems and not a lot of faith. And we caught up with AJ Black, who is a recurring guest now. We talked with him for football. We are now talking with him for basketball. Our BC guy, AJ Black, always a pleasure to chat with. We now welcome on AJ Black. He is the editor and publisher of Boston College Sports Illustrated and the host of Locked On BC. AJ, you're a month into your podcasting career. How's everything going with that?
It's a transition, definitely. I'm loving it, though. You know, I do a daily podcast now, and I talk about Boston College and really get into it. It's check it out. You get a whole dose of me 5 days a week.
I got to ask you, AJ, you're now one of the few recurring guests we've had, because you came on BC football, now you're back for basketball. Can we officially call you friend of the program, AJ?
Absolutely.
Okay.
I throw out friend for everything. You can use me for that.
All right. We're adding to our list. So AJ Black, friend of the program, here to talk BC men's basketball today.
Excellent. Excellent. Thanks for having me on, guys. Friends.
No problem. Thanks for coming on. Everything going well with the family and staying safe right now?
Yeah. You know, I'm quarantined. I work from home this is like my side hustle kind of thing. So I work from home a lot, and it's crazy out there. And I'm hoping for everyone else out there to stay safe. And hopefully that vaccine gets here sooner rather than later. I'm seeing more and more news about it, and hopefully by, you know, this time next year, we can go to games again and, you know, trash talk other fans and all that good stuff again in person instead of just on Twitter.
Exactly. I saw, on the Twitter sphere, you've got a 2-year-old that's going after the Christmas tree. What's going on with that?
Oh, my 2-year-old is all over everything. So last week I was on ACC radio with Nicole Arabak and Roddy Jones. And my wife had to work, and I was like, oh boy, I got the baby and I have to be on the right. And I'm like, all right, let's roll the dice on this. I think I can do it. So I threw on Moana. I gave him crackers. I was like, he's going to be happy. I can do the 10-minute interview and get through this. 6 minutes in, comes flying in. Halfley. Cause it's every time I'm on the phone, that's all he wants to talk about is Jeff Halfley, the coach. And Nicole Arabak, without even skipping a beat, is like, who is that? I'm like, it's my son. He thinks you're Jeff Halfley. So she wanted me to ask him questions and find out more about what he thinks. And he answered his first radio interview with her, whether Jeff Halfley should be the ACC coach of the year. And he said, yes, I don't think he should be. I think that should be Dave Doran, but that's not where I'm going. But yeah, there's that. And then he's trying to rip down the Christmas tree, and I gotta work on that. He's going to rip up. I got some really valuable ornaments up there that could go.
So he's a little Eagles fan right now.
Oh, big time. Yeah. He likes Baldwin. He has his own little Baldwin toy, and he went to his first BC game last year. He's at BC in Richmond. But he also is a big fan of any school that has a Bulldog. So like Georgia, Drake, he just loves it. We had some like Bulldog toys, and then I showed him like on TV teams that had one, like UGA and stuff like that. And he's like all into that now. So like, I think we get BC and a bunch of Bulldogs, and we get my son set.
That is perfect. What a good start to the young fandom and all of that, and continuing to build and diversify the team portfolio. Yeah. Any team. And hey, Georgia's, they got better football resumes than Syracuse and BC do right now. So right. It's not a bad team to have to follow.
Exactly. Go watch the real football in the SEC, right?
Exactly. We're going ACC basketball now. The ACC slate starting up on Saturday. And it's an odd situation for Boston College, as you were. We were talking before we got on today. And it sort of all starts with Jim Christian.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's an awkward spot for Boston College right now. It's the seventh year of Jim Christian. You know, he's got a winning percentage of, I think, 38% just overall, and 22% in ACC play, and he's back. And so the fan base, their patience is pretty thin. All the talk going into the season, there were two big storylines. Obviously, the storyline is, why is Christian back? But the bigger one was, okay, look at the schedule that they're putting together for an out-of-conference schedule for Boston College. You had, to start it off, it was Villanova, Baylor. You had Missouri. You had, one after another and after another. We're like, what are they doing? This is Boston College, a team that finished 13-19, and you have, five or six of the top 25 teams in your out-of-conference schedule. And they're going to go right into ACC play with this. So there was that piece. And then the talk about, okay, so then Christian kind of helped us kind of look at it through his eyes and what he thought. He said, this is the deepest Boston College team that he's had in 7 years. And I, from what I've seen so far, I don't disagree with him. He's got more depth on that team right now than I've ever seen at BC. But to look at that team and to look at the depth, and I think that's been the big story too, is like, you know, who are these players? How do they get the rotation right? There's a lot of communication issues going on right now, and it's caused losses, and it's already starting to slip. You know, they fixed their schedule a little bit by adding Florida in there. Sounds like a good plan. it's a tough start to start a season when you already have an ACC schedule with an unproven team. And they're already 1-4, and I've already written a couple of times, and I just finished my podcast about where do they go from here? Because I don't, I have to imagine for Christian to save his job, he's going to have to make the tournament, and they've already got four losses. We don't know how many games they're going to play because of all the cancellations. And so you could be getting into the tournament playing 15 games. You already have four losses. You're going to lose a handful more. Is the season already done? I mean, is Boston College already cooked? And you could make the argument that they are. And I think that's where everything sits right now.
What's like the mood around the team? Because you mentioned they're 1-4, which is never good, but it's weird. And almost, I look at the losses. It's Villanova, St. John's, Florida, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. These are good basketball teams. Like, I wouldn't say there was a game that BC lost that I considered a bad loss. It's just that they didn't build that many wins necessarily into their non-conference schedule like other teams do. So is there maybe optimism around the strength of schedule, or 1-4 is 1-4?
Yeah, I mean, last night's press conference with Christian, he was pretty glum. he just looked like a defeated coach. And in you could read it either that he was just pissed and upset that they just lost their fourth game, or just kind of defeated. And I couldn't tell. He just didn't seem, he usually can talk to you why they lost. He just didn't seem like that last night. So, the mood is starting to get a little bit more chippy, especially with the team. You're seeing more technicals out of Jay Heath, who is not a very emotional guy. Christian got call for one against Florida the other day. So I'm starting to see a little bit more of that. In terms of the program itself, it's a tough place to be in. And it feels like, you know, you have a lame duck. For me, it feels like there's a lame duck coach, you know. They can't recruit right now. And you know, Boston College recruits how they recruit, but like what players get, players read what's on Twitter and what's on the message boards and stuff. So they know the deal going on with Jim Christian right now. So, you know, they're trying to build for like future classes with a coach that many kids know probably isn't going to be there. So that I got to think the mood is just, it's got to be weird. And it's hard to tell because we're not there to see it. But it just feels like it could be off.
We will switch from bashing BC for a little bit and getting out of the true negative mood in terms of, you know, all of the surroundings around the program and the team right now with a 1-4 start. But Winston Tabbs has been pretty damn good to start out the season. What have you sort of seen out of him in sort of making some jumps and figuring out his game?
Yeah, you know, it's so easy to jump into the negatives, but there definitely have been some things that have stuck out that are like, wow, look at what this team's been able to do. And Tabs has to be the biggest one. You know, going into the season, my co-host on Locked On Boston College, Eric Hofstas, joins every now and then, and he's really connected to the basketball program. He talks to some of the coaches, you know, like not just like, you know, press conferences, but like talks to them. And the talk about Tabs was that going into the season to lower expectations, which was interesting. He said, you know, the coaches, you know, they had said like, he's coming back from a pretty disastrous knee injury with bad, you know, with a pretty significant surgery for it. Don't expect him to be like he was before. But what I've seen is exactly what he was before. So it's interesting that expectation, I haven't seen that. I've seen him look like the scorer that he was, a guy who can cut to the basket. He can, you know, he can shoot from outside, he can make his own shot. Seen a lot of that this year. So he's definitely been and he's got to be a guy too where I hope that as they continue to try to figure out this rotation and figure out who the alpha is on offense, that it's got to be Tabs has got to be the guy that gets more shots than any other guy on that offense, because he can take over a game, I think, if they let him.
And you mentioned the knee injury. Has there been any talk about how he feels? Does he look 100% to you? I know you're not a doctor, but
right.
has he felt in gameplay, or has it felt to you that he's been moving at full speed?
Yeah, I haven't seen any changes in minutes. Like the press conferences have been so weird with COVID, and they were at the Bubbleville and at Mohegan Sun. And so you got these really weird press conferences where you had to submit questions ahead of time, and like you couldn't get like much of anything out of the coaches. So I couldn't get like, there wasn't much talk about Tabs. But what I've seen on the court, he's, you know, he's playing starter minutes. He's there's been no, you know, he hasn't looked or seemed different in terms of his play. So I don't think it's affected him at all, but you know, it's hard to tell.
When you look around the rest of this team and you sort of see, are there any other, you know, sort of standout guys that you weren't necessarily anticipating to be big contributors or to make a decent jump this year? Has anyone else kind of stood out for BC?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you would say Jay Heath, but I think people expected him. He scored, you know, 12, 13 points a game last year as a true freshman, and he's been pretty consistent with that. He's about a 15-point scorer. So he wouldn't be my answer, but I would say CJ Felder, who was the center from last year. He came in and he was a 17-year-old starting for BC last year, young kid. And when I heard, again, I can't see practices, so it's hard to tell, you know, the stories of what's going on, that he was going to be, you know, the starting center again. I was like, oh, he didn't have a really good year last year. And I was like, they're going to get killed at rebounding because he struggled with that last year. But he looks like a completely different player. And, you know, he went from 17 to 18 years old or 19 now or whatever he is. He looks bigger. He's a much more physical rebounder. Seeing much more out of his offense. You know, he's almost averaging a double-double right now. He had 11 rebounds last night against Minnesota. You're seeing a lot more out of him. So he's a guy that I was like, wow. you know, he still makes mistakes. You know, he had a couple of traveling violations last night. So the mistakes are still there, but you can see where he could progress to. And it would be a really good role player and a good offensive and defensive weapon for Boston College.
You know, it's crazy. He's the center. He's 6'7". He's shooting 44% from three right now.
Yep.
The five. Is he spending a lot of time on offense on the outside, or is he kind of like leaking out there, you think, and surprising people?
I think it's the leaking. I think that he you see him when you're watching the offense and you see him posting down low, and then all of a sudden you see him trickle off, and then you're like, oh, and they let – usually you see the defense is kind of like, oh, if C.J. Felder's going to go shoot threes, we'll let him. And he's making them pay, which has been a big surprise for me. Is you don't expect him to be that kind of shooter.
We've talked – I mean, we just kind of hit that. This is a team that when you sort of look at the stat line, almost anyone percentage-wise looks decent from beyond the arc. And that's is that something that they've sort of developed in terms of, you know, they're going to play almost a five-out type situation where anyone can get the ball on the outside and anyone can put the ball on the floor or anyone can just spot up?
I think it's what they're living and dying by right now. Last night on ESPN, the play-by-play guy, John Mita Perel, who does both BC football and basketball, was saying that he talked to Christian, and Christian said that was like a big emphasis of theirs. Now, I think it leaks, and this goes right back to my negativity, and I apologize because that's where the program is right now. A lot of their offense just stagnates on the outside. Like they're struggling so hard to get that ball inside or to do anything, to find lanes, to find someone who can, you know, pick and roll or do anything. They're just not doing it. And so they settle for outside shots, and they're hitting them more, which is good. But then they go for long periods where, if that's what they're settling with, teams are just leaving them outside to do that, and they're not hitting shots. And they'll go through long periods of time where they're just, you know, the offense stagnates and they can't get buckets. So I think the outside shooting's good, but they need to figure out a way to get that. They got to get some more interior play going because it's the combination's not working right now.
BC this offseason brought in five transfers, one of which, Makai Ashton Lankford, he's probably had the most run, started all five games, over 26 minutes per game. How have you rated his performance so far? How do you see him kind of fitting into the team going forward?
He's like a spark plug. And I'm still trying to figure out what he is going to do for this team. He's just a ball of energy out there, which is good because BC really needs it. And he's got a little swagger to him, which, again, BC needs that because they're a bunch of nice guys that don't really have an edge to them, and he does. So he came from Providence and sat out last year. His brother's on the team. So his brother, Damar Lankford, was a top 100 recruit, and he's a big, big forward. He's 18 years old, and the coaches call him a band boy. He's just a big kid. He's figuring out what he can and can't do. But his brother, Makai, you know, he's a guard who is aggressive. He's super aggressive. But the knock on him is that he makes a lot of mistakes. He turns the ball over a lot of charging fouls because he's just kind of out of control a lot. It's there. And for me, when I write my previews of Boston College in these games, he's always like my X factor because I can see what he can do for this offense and what he could provide in terms of getting other guys open, making that offense more aggressive because he's the one guy that will just take it to the hoop while the other guys are just kind of, you know, hovering around the three-point line. And I think if they can figure out a way to harness him, he might be that key that they need to turn the season around. It just hasn't been there. He's an inconsistent shooter. I think he shot like 2 for 8 against Minnesota the other day. And he gets in foul trouble really quick. So he's someone I've been watching, but I think he might be a key to getting Boston College back into the winning column.
Let's say you're a Syracuse guy, or I'm a Syracuse guy, the Syracuse listeners right here. What are the three storylines that you would say that you need to know this, and this as you head into a game against Boston College? What are the three things to know about this team?
Okay. So the first thing is Boston College is like super hot and cold. So you're going to watch and you're going to see them for a period of time. They're going to look like, wow, this is a team that really is good. You know, they're going to shoot really hard. You know, they'll be aggressive. And then they hit these periods, 4 or 5 minutes, where they don't look like an ACC team. They're dribbling the ball off their feet. They're throwing the ball away, offensive fouls. They're letting up horrible, horrible transition defense. And so they mix this and it goes on all game long. So you're going to see that. I'm sure it's going to happen because it's kind of been the hallmark of Jim Christian's team. It's happened every year, no matter how deep or not deep this team is, they make these mistakes every year. So that'd be one. The second thing that you're going to see is a team that has two really good scorers. You're going to see Winston Tapps, who we talked about, and Jay Heath. Where they go is where this offense goes. They scored like, I think almost like 50% of the points last night against Minnesota. So those are two guys that if they're hot, the offense is going to do well. But if they're struggling, if either of them go cold, they're going to struggle. The other piece is, it kind of goes into that first piece, but I'll make it another one, is the defense has just been putrid this year. They played better against Minnesota. I thought they played pretty well, but watch what they did against Florida. If they play against a team that is athletic, if they play a team that can, you know, run the floor, they get run off the court because they let up way too many easy buckets. They struggle down low. Stephon Mitchell was supposed to be the defensive player of the year and could have been one for the ACC this year. A lot of projections I saw, and he's definitely not been that this year. They're just struggling. Team defense has just been a big issue with this team this year. They got to score points to win. I've said this, you know, everyone yells at me that like, oh, BC's got to play better defense. I don't know if that's in their team DNA. I think they got to outscore teams to win because their defense is just not going to do it.
So I'll ask you, BC is a tough schedule. They already had a tough schedule and they continue to have a tough schedule.
Uh-huh.
Syracuse, I think most people view middle of the pack ACC team. Maybe the next game after that, Cal is an opportunity, but it's NC State, Louisville, Duke, Virginia. That's a gauntlet to start yep. the ACC schedule. When do you think the Eagles pick up their second win of the season?
I think they're going to beat Cal. And I have no basis on why they're going to beat Cal. I think with Syracuse, with their zone defense, is just going to give BC fits. And we'll talk about that in a minute. Just because they're so sloppy. And I just feel like a team that can be disciplined and can cause a team like BC to make so many of those errors, they're going to do it. I think Cal, and then after that, I have no clue where the next win's going to come. It could be for a while. I actually wrote about that on the site, like, strap in because this could get ugly, and it's tough right now. But you know, if BC is riding a 9 or 10 game losing streak, fan base is gonna be nasty. It's already bad, but it's gonna get real bad.
Definitely could.
I was hoping that we'd get bowl news soon so I could write about that. But like, I'm stuck with football. I mean, basketball now, and all I get for responses to anything I write. Is just fire Jim Christian. That's all I get. Fire Jim Christian. You know what they need to do? Fire Jim Christian. And I'm like, okay, that's great, but we have a whole season to talk about that. Why don't we talk about – they're not going to fire him in the middle of the season. Boston College will never do that. Let's talk about what they're doing wrong and why we should fire Jim Christian because he's doing X, Y, and Z. Nope, just fire Jim Christian. He stinks. That's all I get.
You alluded to it right there, so we'll go right into it. What do yep. you sort of see matchup-wise for BC against Syracuse? It seems like you're not optimistic for what the offense can do against the 2-3.
Nope. I don't have the scores in front of me, but I know against Syracuse last year, Boston College struggled against it. And I just see a team right now that is undisciplined and – you know, their offense is not clicking the way it needs to be. And so playing against a team that can play a solid zone defense is just going to, it's going to kick their butt. I see Struggle City coming in for Boston College this weekend.
50 points last year, 50 points against the zone.
Yep.
Not exactly what you're looking for. 50 and then 71 the second time they met. So a little bit of improvement, but definitely not, the numbers that you're looking for in order to get a win. We'll trouble you before we let you go for a prediction. I think we, Ben and I sort of know where you're going to fall in terms of predicting this game, but any thoughts, any keys, what does BC need to do to win this game?
So, I feel so negative and I hate it. Cause I like this team. I like some of the players on this team, and Jim Christian's a nice guy. It's just, it's been a long 7 years. I mean, just for context, my favorite sporting event that I've ever been to when I went to Boston College was a basketball game against Syracuse in 2006 when BC was 20-0 and they beat Syracuse, who I think was a top five school at that point. And that was when you had like Hakeem Warwick and Jerry McNamara.
Yeah.
The Conte Forum was nuts that game. And it was when students would pack, when season tickets would go on sale, you'd have people camping out at Boston College. So it was just like any other program. Like BC was there. And to see where it's gone to over the last 15 years after Al Skinner left, it's sad because no one cares anymore. You watch, it's called Conte Morgue for a reason because no one goes. It's just dead in there. The fans call it that. They call it Conte Morgue. And I just, I go into a game like Syracuse. The one thing that BC needs to do is to play more consistently. So I would say, cut the unforced errors. If they can figure out, to stop doing, lots and lots of, they're having 18 turnovers a game, I think is what I saw at one point. They're making so many boneheaded mistakes and they're not a team that can afford to do that. They're going to turn over the ball. It's just part of the game, but they need to cut it down and they need to get that under wraps and to do the little things. That was the thing with Al Skinner when he was here, is that the teams would do the little things. Free throw shooting. They were shooting 63% at one point. Again, not a good team, a good enough team to give up and leave points off the board. And that's what they're doing. Playing a little bit better down the defensive end and playing aggressive for the whole, for the game. Don't take your foot off the gas. And I think those are the big things they're going to have to do. I'd be unwise. If I was a betting man, I would totally bet on Syracuse in this game. I just don't feel like it's going to be a lost season for Boston College unless something changes. And it's foolish to think that it's going to. We're in the seventh year with a coach that has a 38% winning percentage and has won 22% of his ACC games. Why would you think that changes? And I don't think it will. Bringing in a bunch of mid-level transfers is not going to change the outlook of your schedule in the ACC. I just don't think that's going to happen. So there's my end of my negativity for you.
Hey, it's all good.
All your Syracuse listeners are going, wow, he really, really doesn't like this team. But I do. It's just, I'm being realistic.
It's hard to say we don't know how you feel after seeing the Syracuse fan base this football season.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we get each other there. So,
and I'll knock the Syracuse, fandom right back into their place if they're getting a little start to look ahead forward from this BC game. Remember 2014, Syracuse comes in at 25-0, and BC is sitting there at what, 6-19? They were terrible. Who gives Syracuse the first loss of the year? Don't look past BC. It's the one lesson. Do not look past Boston College. They got to play a game. And
that's the one thing I could say about Jim Christian is that he never consistently wins the games, but every year he wins a game that you're like, what? Like, we've beaten Duke. We beat UNC last year. We beat UVA last year. So you get those games every now and then where you're just like, oh, the season's over. And then they pull off a win that you just out of nowhere. And so that's a positive, I guess.
Yes, it's the Dino Babers. It's got the same assets.
Right.
With the sporadic wins over top 25 teams that give you the longest leash in the history of college football. AJ Black, thank you so much for coming on. It's always a pleasure.
All right. Anytime, guys. It was good talking to you again. See ya.
AJ Black, always a pleasure. Parent, reporter, podcast host. What doesn't he do? He is a friend of the pod. He actually, as we just noted, as Ben noted, is not a doctor. So there's one thing that AJ Black does not do. But Syracuse BC coming up Saturday at 1 o'clock tip off, 12:30 countdown to tip off on WAER. For those of you who don't like watching games on TV or enjoy hearing more youthful voices in your ear during a basketball game, always fun. You can catch the game on WAER.org or 88.3 FM for you local fellows. We got some fun, and it's an interesting matchup and a weird one, because as we just learned, there aren't the most positives surrounding this BC team, but at the same time, there are a few positives. So where do you sort of look towards the key for Syracuse winning this one, Ben?
First of all, youthful voices in your ear. I think that goes down as the creepiest way we've ever described a WAER broadcast.
Let's rephrase that. Let's bring it back. I don't even know. I definitely regret my wording, but I'm not sure I could come up with something better at the moment. College days broadcasters. We'll take it out of Ben's mouth.
It's a good listen. I turn it on and watch the TV, but I mute the TV. It's a good listen. Don't let us spoil it for you. But
it's a good time.
I'll get back to the game. So yes, there are some positives. And one of them, as we talked about when I specifically qualified AJ Black as not a doctor, was Winston Tabbs. Winston Tabbs has been the leading scorer for the Eagles this year by a good margin. He's averaging over 17 points per game, and he's been getting hotter. And I think this is something that you see with a lot of guys who sustained a long-term injury. He was out for half of his freshman year, all of sophomore year. Now he's back. In the last three games, he's gone for over 20 twice. Last game, he scored a season-high 24. And where he's really been heating up is three-point range. He was only 3 for his first 10 to start the season. He's been 7 for his last 18, which is good for 39% from beyond the arc. So not only do you have to shut down Winston Tabbs, but I think what you really have to do is make him a driver. You know, if he's gonna score 20 points, but it's on twos, then he's taking enough shots that I don't think Syracuse is too worried about it. It's if he really starts heating up from three-point range, that's when he can score a lot quickly, and that's when the Orange get in trouble, and specifically the 2-3 zone gets in trouble with hot three-point shooters.
For me, it's got to be just use this weird sort of size situation to your advantage. BC has an incredibly small lineup. They're playing – their biggest guys are 6'8", 6'7". In terms of who they're playing down low, that gives Syracuse a really big advantage in terms of, one, they don't have to necessarily utilize the young freshmen and the young centers that they're not really sure who can do what. You can play this sort of smaller lineup that you've become accustomed to without Barama Sidibe, with Dolezal, and then using you can even go small and take Dolezal out for a little bit and not really lose too much in terms of your ability to play in the paint and play in the post if you put Woody Newton in there for a little bit. You can go small in terms of having Dolezal out or go small with Dolezal in. It's a fun spot. They've got a nice little situation here where they can sort of play their game, and Jim Boeheim can approach this however he wants. If he wants to try and utilize the young bigs, he can go that route. But at the same time, he's not sort of pigeonholed into needing them to come in and perform, because BC's got, for lack of better terms here, a tiny lineup. They're a small team. I believe they're 198 in terms of height per KenPom, which is relatively short, and the players they play are even shorter. So it's a size advantage Syracuse has in terms of height, but interesting to see how Quincy will match up, because although they don't have the height, they're solid guys too, those sort of Quincy Guerrier-type builds. So maybe this is a day where Dolezal can really excel and Quincy sort of takes a more secondary role like you've seen him do in the past, just sort of based on matchup.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. You mentioned they're 195 in height in the country. A lot of narratives around how this is a shorter Syracuse team, still 35th in height in the country. I mean, a short Syracuse is like small center. That means he's 6'8". Like, it's not the craziest thing, but it will be interesting. I think Stephon Mitchell matches up pretty well to Guerrier, but if he gets in foul trouble, then Quincy's likely taking on a guy that's, you know, 6'5" or shorter. And that's, you know, I probably should have put it out on Ostrom Twitter. I put it out on personal Twitter after last game. feels like they could have used Quincy a little bit more against Rutgers the way he was scoring. If Dolezal has the big height advantage, I agree, you go to him and Quincy clears out from the paint. But if Quincy gets someone on him who's smaller, we've seen it this year in almost every single game, he's been able to use his body really well, leverage smaller guys, and get position to get tons of rebounds and tons of easy buckets. So I think shutting down Tabs and the size advantage, pounding it inside, those are both two pretty good keys, not to pat ourselves on the back too much.
Yeah, we make good keys and we make mediocre predictions, which are starting back up. We're doing predictions for all ACC matchups for Syracuse this year. We're going to go with, I think we've decided on a sort of three-tiered system. We're going to go just straight head-to-head for 1 point. Another point's going to be against the spread, and another point will be the over-under. So we'll look at all those three. We'll keep a running tally going. We'll get competitive here. And you can catch that. We're not doing it on the podcast because you're not going to be getting lines released this early. So we'll do that via Twitter. So keep it locked over there at Ostrom Avenue Pod. You can also, you know, follow us while you're there. Give us a follow on Twitter. You could give our personals a follow as we're talking, because sometimes Ben gets a little selfish and doesn't tweet from the Ostrom account. At BenShulman7, at OValentine14, if you want to follow us on the personals and get our thoughts on you know, life, Syracuse basketball, and Ben's sake, the Green Bay Packers, and Owen's sake, the Seattle Seahawks. Just get it all going out there. And you know what? While you're hitting the follow button, you could also hit the subscribe button. Hit the subscribe button, leave us a review, leave us a rating, wherever you get your podcasts. We're growing. We're trying to expand, and any follow or subscription or rating goes a very, very long way, and we are very appreciative of all of those. We've got ACC basketball. It's here. We've had some tune-ups. Rutgers said a lot, but it also didn't say a lot because of who was missing. Buddy Boeheim's back. Syracuse, BC, 1 o'clock on Saturday. We'll have it all. We're going to keep giving you the feedback on Twitter at Ostrom Avenue Pod. I can't stress it enough. At Ostrom Avenue Pod. We got some good stuff over there for you, and definitely worth some time. Worth at least a look. If you don't like it, I don't judge. But if you give it a look, I think you're going to like what you see. So give us a follow over there. For Ben Shulman, I'm Owen Valentine. This has been the Ostrom Avenue Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We'll catch you next time. Stay safe.